George wanted to know where they had gone and what they had done, but Lazarus put him off with a promise and used the chance to repair to his tiny bath and repair himself. Hair a bit must. Thank God respectable women did not use lipstick. Uniform slightly wrinkled, nothing damning about that. 5 minutes later, refreshed and certain there were no feathers on his chin, Lazarus returned to the front of the house and offered George and Brian Jr. an account of the evening, truthful in everything he said. He had just started when Carol came down and listened too. Then Mrs. Smith rejoined them, moving regally as always and carrying a little package wrapped in tissue paper. A surprise for you, Sergeant Theodore. Please, don't open it until you are back at camp. Then I'd better put it into my grip right now. If you wish, sir. I think it's bedtime, dears. Yes, Mama, agreed Carol. But Uncle Ted was telling us how you knocked down all the milk bottles. He says you should pitch for the Blues, Mama, added George. All right, 15 minutes. Mrs. Smith, said Lazarus, you ought not to start your stopwatch on us until I get back. You're as bad as the rest of my children, Sergeant. Very well. Lazarus put the package into his grip, locked it from long habit, and returned. Nancy and her young man arrived. Lazarus was introduced while looking over Jonathan Weatherall with real interest. Pleasant young fellow, a bit on the gawky side.
Tamara and I will be interested. So let's photograph him by eye and be able to sketch him and remember any word he says.
Mrs. Smith urged her prospective son-in-law into the parlor while cutting Nancy out of the herd. Lazarus resumed describing what they had done at the amusement park while Jonathan looked politely bored. Mrs. Smith returned, carrying a laden tray, and said, "That 15 minutes is up, dears. Jonathan, Nancy wants you to help her with something. Will you see what it is? She's in the kitchen." Brian Jr. asked if he could put the car into the barn. "Sergeant Uncle Ted, I haven't let your car sit out at the curb at night, not once. But I'll get it out for you, first thing in the morning. It's kind of tricky, sort of a Z-turn. You have to back and fill." Lazarus thanked him, kissed Carol goodnight, as she was clearly expecting it. George couldn't seem to make up his mind whether he had outgrown kissing or not, so Lazarus settled it by shaking hands and telling him he had quite a grip on him. At that point, Mr. Johnson got home, and the good nights started over. 5 minutes later, Mrs. Smith, her father, and Lazarus were seated in the parlor over coffee and cake, and Lazarus was suddenly reminded of the first night he had been invited in. Save that the men were now in uniform, the tableau was the same. Each was seated in the spot he had been in that night. Mrs. Smith presided over the company coffee service with the same serene dignity. Even the refreshments were the same. He looked for changes, could find only three. His elephant was not back of Mrs. Smith's chair. The prizes they had won at the amusement park were on a table near the door. And sheet music for "Hello Central, Give Me No Man's Land" was open on the piano. "You were late tonight, Father."
7 recruits, and I had just the usual sizes for them, 2 large and 2 small. Ted, we get what the Army doesn't want. Proper, of course. We now have Lewis guns for the machine gun companies and enough Springfields to go around. We are beginning to look less like Villa's bandits. Now, I'm not complaining. Daughter, what are those things on that table? They look out of place.
The Cupid doll I won myself, so I'm thinking of giving it a place of honor on top of the piano. The Teddy Roosevelt bear was won by Sergeant Theodore. Perhaps he's taking it to France with him. Electric Park, Father. And I didn't think it cost Sergeant Theodore more than twice what the prizes are worth for us to win them. We had a lucky night, and a very gay one. Lazarus could see the old man starting to cloud up. In public, with a bachelor? With her husband away? So he spoke up. "I can't take it to France, Mrs. Smith. I made a deal with Woody, don't you remember? My teddy bear for his elephant. I assume it's a firm deal. He carried it from then on." Mr. Johnson said, "If you didn't get it in writing, Ted, he'll hornswoggle you.
Do I understand that Woody went to Electric Park with you two?
Yes, sir.
Between ourselves, I expect to leave the elephant in Woody's custody for the duration, but I'm going to dicker with him first.
You're still Hornswoggle, yeah?
Marine, the idea was to give you relief from the children, especially Woody. What in Ned possessed you to take him along?
We didn't exactly take him along, Father. He was a stowaway.
She gave her father an accurate account, save that she left out certain things and did not include a timetable.
Mr. Johnson shook his head and looked pleased.
That boy will go far, if they don't hang him first. Marine, you should have spanked him and fetched him home. Then your dad should have gone on with your ride.
Oh, fuss, Father. I did have my ride, and a very nice one. I made Woodrow sit in the back seat and keep quiet. Then I had a gay time at the park, a bonus I would not have had if Woodrow had not invited himself along.
Woody had some justice on his side, Lazarus admitted. I did promise him an outing at Electric Park, then never kept my promise.
Should have whacked him.
It's too late for that, Father, and we did have fun. We ran into some people from church, too, Loretta and Clyde Simpson.
That old witch? She'll gossip about you, Marine.
I think not. We chatted while Woody rode the miniature train. But you might remember that Sergeant Bronson is your eldest sister's son?
Ira Johnson raised his eyebrows, then chuckled.
Samantha would be surprised if she were still with us. Ted, my eldest sister, was thrown by a horse she was trying to break at 85. She lingered a while, then turned her face to the wall and refused to eat.
Very well. I'll remember.
Ted, this is better than blaming my gay dog brother and still harder to check on. Samantha lived in Illinois, where I had three husbands, and one of them could have been named Bronson for all anyone here would know. Do you mind? Gives you a family of sorts.
I don't mind. Although I like to think of this family as my family.
And we like to have you think of us that way, son. Marine, is our young lady home?
Just before you got home, Father. There in the kitchen, on the excuse that she wanted to make a sandwich for Jonathan. Since I'm sure it's an excuse to stay out there and spoon, I suggest that if you want something from the kitchen, you allow me to fetch it. I'll be noisy enough to let Nancy jump off his lap.
Theodore, Nancy is engaged. We just haven't made a formal announcement. I think it's best to let them marry now, since he'll be joining the army almost at once. What do you think?
I'm hardly entitled to an opinion, Mrs. Smith. I hope they will be happy.
They will be, said Mr. Johnson. He's a fine lad. I tried to sign him into the 7th, but he insisted on waiting for his birthday so he could go straight into the army, even though he couldn't be drafted for another 3 years. Spirit, I like him.
Ted, if you need to go to your room, you can go around this other way and avoid the kitchen.
A few minutes later, the young people came out of the kitchen, made polite sounds without sitting down. Then Nancy stepped out onto the back porch to say goodnight to her swain, came back in, and sat down. Mr. Johnson smothered a yawn.
Time to hit the hay. You will too, Ted, if you're smart. Too noisy around here to sleep late, especially where your room is.
Nancy said quickly,
I'll keep the young'uns quiet, Grandpa, so Uncle Ted can sleep.
Lazarus stood up.
Thank you, Nancy, but I didn't get much rest on the train last night. I think I'll go right to bed. Don't worry about keeping quiet in the morning. I'll wake up at reveille time anyhow. Habit.
Mrs. Smith stood up. We'll all go to bed. Mr. Johnson shook hands as he said goodnight. Mrs. Smith gave Lazarus a symbolic peck on the cheek, such as she had given him on arrival, thanked him for a lovely evening, and urged him to turn over and go back to sleep if the reveille habit wakened him. Nancy hung back and kissed him goodnight as her elders started up the stairs. Lazarus went to his room and on into his bath. Marina told him not to hesitate to draw a tub. It would not wake the children. He started one, went back and opened his grip, got out the little package, took it into the bath, and threw the bolt, there being no key in the bedroom door.
It was a small flat box, such as garters might come in. He opened it carefully, intending to rewrap it exactly as it had been. Ah, the garters. Faded, as she had said, and clearly not new, and yes, redolent with her own evocative fragrance. Would it last long enough for him to get it home, have the lovely, delicate aroma analyzed, amplified, and fixed? Probably, and with computer help, a skilled scentologist could separate out the odors of satin and rubber and amplify hers selectively. He would have to go to Secundus for such expert help. Worth the trip and then some. Now let's see those naughty mottos. One read, "Open all hours, ring bell for service." The other, "Welcome, come in and stir the fire." Sweet darling, those aren't naughty. A plain envelope under the garters. He laid them aside and opened it. A plain white card. "Best I could do, beloved. M." A photograph. Amateur work, but excellent quality for this here and now. Marine herself outdoors in bright sunlight against a background of thick bushes. She was standing gracefully, smiling and looking at the camera, dressed only in her French postcard style. Lazarus felt a burst of passion.
"Why, you generous, trusting darling. Not your only copy."
"No, Brian would have more than one print. Undoubtedly had one with him."
"This print would have been locked somewhere in your bedroom."
"Yes. Your waist is slender without a corset.
And those are not broken down. They are lovely. And I'm certain what caused your happy smile." "Thank you. Thank you."
With the photograph was a little flat package in tissue paper. He opened it gently. A thick lock of red hair, tied with a green ribbon. The lock curled in a tight circle. Lazarus stared at it.
"Marine, my beloved, this is the most precious gift of all, but I do hope you cut it so carefully that Brian won't notice it's missing."
He looked at each of her gifts again, restored them just as they had been, put the box into the bottom of the grip, locked it, turned off the tub, undressed, and got into the water. But a lukewarm tub did not make him sleep. For a long time he lay in darkness and relived the past few hours. He now felt that he understood Maureen. She was relaxed with what she was, liked herself, as Lazarus thought of it. And liking yourself was the necessary first step toward loving other people. She had no guilt feelings because she never did anything that could make her feel guilty. She was unblinkingly honest with herself, was her own self-judge instead of looking to others, did not lie to herself, but lied to others without hesitation when needed for kindness, or to get along with rules she had not made and did not respect. Lazarus understood that. He lived the same way, and now knew where he got the trait. From Maureen, and through her, from Gramp, and from Pop, too, reinforced. He felt very happy, despite an unsatisfied ache in his loins. Or in part because of it, he corrected. He found that he cherished that ache. When the doorknob turned, he was instantly alert, out of bed and waiting before the door opened. She was in his arms, warm and fragrant. She pulled back to shrug off her wrap, let it fall, came back into his arms, body to body, and gave her mouth fully. When they broke the kiss, she stayed in his arms, clinging. He whispered huskily, "Why did you risk it?" She answered softly, "I found that I must. Once I knew that, I realized that it was even less risk than our walnut tree. The children never come downstairs at night when we have a guest. Father may suspect me, but that makes it certain that he won't check on me. Don't worry, darling. Take me to bed now." He did so. When they were quiet, she sighed happily and said, lips against his ear, arms and legs around him, "Theodore, even in this, you are so much like my husband that I can barely wait till the war is over to tell him all about you."
You decided to tell him?
Beloved Theodore, there was never a doubt that I would. I softened some of what I told you tonight and left out a little. Brian does not require me to confess, but it does not upset him. We settled that 15 years ago. There was never a doubt that I would. I softened some of what I told you tonight and left out a little. Brian does not require me to confess, but it does not upset him. We settled that 15 years ago. He convinced me that he really does trust my judgment and my taste.
Very softly, but merrily, she giggled against his ear.
It's a shame that I so seldom have anything to confess. He enjoys hearing my adventures. He has me tell him about them over and over.
Like rereading a favorite book.
I wish I could tell him this one tomorrow night, but I won't. I'll save it.
He's coming home tomorrow?
Late. Quite late. Which is just as well, as I don't expect to get any sleep once he arrives.
She chuckled softly.
He told me on the telephone to B-I-B-A-W-Y-L-O.
And he would W-Y-T-B-W.
That means be in bed asleep with my legs open and he will wake me the best way. But I just pretend to be asleep as I wake up no matter how quietly he tiptoes in.
She gave a tiny giggle.
Then we have a happy little game. As he enters me, I pretend to wake up and call him by name, but never his name. I moan, "Oh, Albert, darling, I thought you would never come," or some such. Then it's his turn. He says something like, "This is Buffalo Bill, Mrs. O'Malley. Hush up and get busy." Then I hush up and do the best I know how. Not another word until we both explode.
"Your best is superb, Mrs. O'Malley. Or was that your best?"
"I tried to make it my best, Buffalo Bill, but I was so dreadfully excited that I got all blurry, so it probably was not. I'd like a chance to do better. Are you going to give me one?"
"Only if you promise not to do better."
"Darling, if that was not your best, then your best would kill me." "You not only talk like my husband and feel like him, especially here, but you even smell like him."
"You smell like Tamara."
"Do I really? Do I make love like her?"
"Tamara knows 1,000 ways, darling, but rarely uses anything unusual. Lovemaking is not technique, dear. It's attitude. Wanting to make someone happy, which you do. But you startled me with your command of technique. You would fetch a high price on his candor."
"You do. But that's not what makes you so much like her. It's your attitude. Tamara knows what is going on in another person's mind and gives him exactly what he needs. Wants to give it."
"She's a mind reader.
Then I'm not like her after all."
"No, she's not a mind reader. But she feels a person's emotions and knows what he needs and gives him that. It might not be sex. Aren't there times when Brian needs something else?"
"Oh, certainly. If he's tired and tense, I hold off and rub his back or head or cuddle with him, maybe encourage him to nap. And then perhaps he really will wake me the best way. I don't try to eat him alive, unless that's what he wants."
"Tamara all over again. Maureen, when Tamara was healing me, at first she didn't even share a bed with me, just slept in the same room and ate with me and listened if I felt like talking. Then for 10 days or so, she did sleep with me, but we just slept. And I slept soundly and had no nightmares. Then one night I woke up, and without a word, Tamara took me into her, and we made love the rest of that night. The next morning, I knew I was well. Soul sickness, all gone."
"You are that way, Maureen. You know, and you do. I've been very homesick and much troubled by this war. Now I'm not. You've cured it.
Tell me, what did you feel for me the first night I was in this house?"
"Loved you at first sight.
Like a silly schoolgirl. Wanted to take you to bed.
I told you so.
Not how you felt. How did I feel?"
"Oh, you had an erection over me."
"Yes, I did, but I thought I had concealed it.
You noticed?
Oh, I didn't see a bulge in your trousers or anything like that. Theodore, I never look down that far. Men become embarrassed so easily. I simply knew you felt as I did. And I felt like a she-dog in heat. Bitch in heat, I mean. I don't intend to be prim in bed. The instant you met my eyes, standing out in the front hall, I knew we needed each other, and I grew terribly excited, and rushed out into the kitchen to get myself under control.
You didn't rush. You moved with smooth grace like a ship under sail.
That ship was sailing fast. I was rushing. I got myself under control, but not less excited.
More.
My breasts ached and my nipples hurt all the time you were here. But that doesn't show. It would not have mattered had Father noticed my excitement, except that he would not have invited you back, and I wanted you to come back. Father knows what I am. He told me so when he was helping me. He told me to face up to what I am and be happy with it, but that I must learn never to let my readiness show, things being the way they are. I've tried, but that night it was very hard not to show it.
You succeeded.
Brian tells me that I don't show it, but that night was so difficult. Theodore, there is something boys do, and sometimes men, when they're terribly frustrated. With their hands?
Certainly. Masturbation. Boys call it jacking off.
So Brian says, but perhaps you don't know that girls and women can do something like it?
I do know. For a lonely person of either sex, it's a harmless but inadequate substitute.
Harmless but inadequate. Quite inadequate. But I'm glad you think it's harmless, because I went upstairs and took a bath. I needed one, although I had bathed before supper, and did it in the tub, and went to bed and stared at the ceiling, and got up and locked the door and took off my nightgown and did it and did it and did it, thinking about you, Theodore, every instant. Your voice, how you smelled, the touch of your hand on mine. But it took at least an hour before I was relaxed enough to sleep.
It took me even longer, dear. And I should have used your direct therapy, but I was punishing myself for being a fool. Off my trolley, dearest one, as I know it is never foolish to love. But I didn't see how we could ever show our love.
I wish I could have been there, darling, because a mile or two away I was aching with it, thinking of you. Theodore, I hoped you felt that way. I needed you so, and hoped that you needed me just as much. But the best I could do was lock my door and do that and think about you, with nobody around but Ethel in her crib and her too young to notice. Oops, I lost you. Oh, dear.
You haven't lost me. Just that wee bit of proud flesh, which will recover soon. You promised me a second chance. Change position? Shoulder pillow? Left or right? I shouldn't have kept my weight on you so long, but I didn't want to move.
I didn't want you to move as long as I could keep even a little of you in me. You aren't too heavy. My hips are broad, and you let a woman breathe, sir. Put me on either side, whichever you prefer.
Like this?
That's comfy. Oh, Theodore, this doesn't feel like our first time. I feel as if I have loved you forever, and you would come back to me at last.
Let's get away from that subject, Mama Maureen. I'll go on loving you forever, my darling.
And so I told her, bluntly, that he would not marry her if she made any fuss over his joining the army when he didn't have to.
What did Nancy tell him?
She told him that she had been waiting to hear that, so now get her pregnant at once so they could have a few days' honeymoon before he joined up. Nancy feels as strongly about warriors as her mother does. She came into my bedroom that night and told me what she had done, slightly teary but not worried over having jumped the gun. So we cried happy tears, and I cleared the matter with Brian and the Weatheralls, and Nancy missed her next period. This was a month ago, and the wedding may be day after tomorrow, or perhaps the day after that.
Darling, I wish I could see you.
Oh, dear, I'd rather not turn on the Mazda lamp, Theodore. These blinds are not so tight, but what light would shine out, as well as light under the door, if by any chance Father came downstairs?
Maureen, I will never ask you to take any chance you don't like. I see you quite well with my fingertips, and these are not broken down.
They flow off my ribs like melted marshmallows, Theodore. When you open that package, please be very careful that no one is around. There is more in it than a pair of garters.
I did open it.
Then you know what I look like.
Was that beautiful girl you?
Tease. Brian had me look straight at his camera.
But, darling, while you don't look down that far, men don't tend to look up very far, especially me. Not when I'm looking at a photograph of a perfectly gorgeous nude model.
Nude model? My best Sunday hat.
Maureen, it is the loveliest picture I have ever owned, and I will cherish it always.
That's better, and I don't believe it, and I love hearing it. Did you open the paper folded in with it?
The baby curl? Did you clip it off Marie?
Theodore, I do not mind being teased. It just makes you more like Brian. But if he teases too much, I bite him. Anywhere. Here, for example.
Hey! Not so hard.
Then tell me where that curl came from.
It came from your pretty... my pretty one. And I'll wear it over my heart forever. But one reason I wanted to look at you is that you clipped so generous a lock that I worried that Brian might notice something missing and ask why.
I can tell him I gave it to the ice man.
He won't believe that, and will be sure that you have a new adventure to confess.
Then he won't press me to tell him now. He'll change the subject, although I wish I could tell him now. I keep thinking about both of you, outdoors and daylight. That was the fantasy that kept me awake. Sweetheart, there is a candle on the dresser. Electricity not being as dependable as the gas lights we used to have, it wouldn't throw enough light to worry me. You may look at me by candlelight all you wish, and as you wish.
Yes, darling.
Matches where? Let me go, and I'll get up and light it. I can find both in the dark. Will I be allowed to look at you, too?
For sure. For contrast, Beauty and the Beast.
She giggled and kissed his ear. Goat, maybe. Or a stallion. Theodore, I needed to be baby-stretched to accept you.
I thought you said I felt like Brian.
But he is a stallion, too. Let me go.
Pay toll.
Oh, goodness, darling, don't do that now. I'll be so shaky I won't be able to strike a match.
Standing, and by the light of one candle, they studied each other. Lazarus felt his breath grow short at the dazzling glory of her. For most of 2 years, he had been deprived of the sweet joy of seeing a woman, and had not realized how starved he had been for that great privilege.
Darling, can you guess how much this means to me?
Mama Maureen, has no one ever told you how much more sweetly beautiful a full-blown woman is than a maiden?
Certainly your lovely breasts have held milk. That's what they're for.
All that I want them to look like marble. I don't. She studied him just as closely, her face solemn, her nipples crinkled tightly. Theodore Lazarus, my strange love, will you guess that I suggested candlelight so that I could see you? A woman is not supposed to get hungry for such things, but I miss the sight, the naked sight of my husband, and how in the name of Satan and all his fallen thrones can I last even till November without even seeing a man I do not know? Alma Bixby told me that she had never seen her husband without clothes. How can a woman live like that? 5 children by a man she's never seen all over? Shocked her when I said that of course I had seen my husband naked. Theodore Lazarus, you don't look like my briny boy. Your coloration is more like mine. But, oh, how you feel like him. Smell like him, talk like him, love like him. Your pretty thing is coming up high again. Brownie, beloved, I'm going to have him once more, as hard as possible, and I'll tell you about it tomorrow night if you'll just ask me for a new bedtime story. Or if I must, I'll save it for you till you get back. You're as strange a man as he is, and just the wise and tolerant husband your body wife needs. Then, cross my heart, dearest. You're as strange a man as he is, and just the wise and tolerant husband your body wife needs. Then, cross my heart, dearest. I'll try my best to keep from it until you come back from over there. But if I can't, even with father and 8 children to guard me, I promise you solemnly that I will never bed with anyone but a warrior, a man to be proud of in every way, such as this strange man. Lazarus, my love, are you really my descendant? I do believe that you know when the war will be over and that my Briny will come safely back to me. Why, I am not sure, but since you told me, I have been free from worry for the first time in many a lonely moon. I hope the rest is true, too. I want to believe in Tamra, and that she is descended from me, but I don't want you to go away in only 8 years. That innocent little picture, if I had not feared shocking you, I would have given you some real French postcards Brownie has taken of me. Will you be upset if I take a closer look? I'll chance it. Mrs. Smith suddenly dropped to one knee, looked closely, then touched him. She looked up. Now? Yes. He picked her up, placed her on the bed. Almost solemnly, she helped him, then caught her breath as they joined. Hard, Theodore. This time don't be gentle. Yes, my beautiful one. When their happy violence was over, she lay quiet in his arms, not talking, communing through touch and the light of one candle. At last she said, I must go, Theodore. No, don't get up. Just let me slide out. She got up, picked up her wrap, blew out the candle, came back, leaned down and kissed him. Thank you, Theodore, for everything. But come back to me. Come back to me. I will. I will. Quickly and silently, she was gone. Coda, 1. Somewhere in France. Dear all my family, I am writing this in my pocket diary where it will stay until this war is over. Not that it matters, you'll get it just as soon. But I can't send a sealed letter now, much less one sealed into 5 envelopes. Something called censorship, which means that every letter is opened and read, and anything that might interest the Boche is cut out, such as dates and places and designations of military units and probably what I had for breakfast. Beans and boiled pork and fried potatoes with coffee. That would dissolve a spoon. You see, I had this lovely ocean voyage as a guest of Uncle Sam, and am now in the land of fine wines and beautiful women. The wine has been vin extremely ordinaire, and they seem to be hiding the beautiful women. The best-looking one I've seen had a slight mustache and very hairy legs, which I could have ignored had I not made the mistake of standing downwind. Darlings, I'm not sure the French take baths, at least in wartime. But I'm in no position to criticize. A bath is a luxury. Today, given a choice between a beautiful woman and a hot bath, I'd pick the bath. Otherwise, she wouldn't touch me. Don't worry that I am now in a war zone. That you've received this is proof that the war is over and I am okay. But it's easier to write a letter than it is to put trivia into a diary every day. War zone is an exaggeration. This is fixed warfare, meaning both sides are in the same fix, pinned down, and I am too far behind the lines to get hurt. I am in charge of a unit called a squad. 8 men. Me and 5 other riflemen, plus an automatic rifleman. The rifle, not the man. This war has no robot fighters. And an 8th man who carries ammunition for the automatic rifleman. It's a corporal's job, and that's what I am.
The promotion to sergeant I was expecting in my last letter, as dated from the United States, got lost in the shuffle when I was transferred to another outfit. Being a corporal suits me. It is the first time I've had men permanently assigned to me. Time enough to get acquainted with each one, learn his strong points and weak ones, and how to handle him. They are a fine bunch of men. Only one is a problem, and it's not his fault. It results from the prejudices of the time. His name is F.X. Dinkowski, and he is simultaneously the only Catholic and the only Jew in my squad. And, twins, if you've never heard of either one, ask Athene. By ancestry, he comes from one religion. Then he was brought up in another. And he has had the tough luck to be placed with country boys who have still a third religion and are not very tolerant. Plus the additional misfortunes of being a city boy and having a voice that grates, even on me, and is clumsy. And when they pick on him, they do if I'm not right there, it makes him more clumsy. Truthfully, he's not soldier material. But I wasn't asked. So he's the ammunition carrier, the best I can do to balance my squad. They call him Dinky, which is only mildly disparaging, but he hates it. I use his full last name. I do with all of them. For ritualistic reasons, having to do with the mystique of military organizations at this here and now, it is best to call a man by his family name. But let's leave the finest squad in the AEF and bring you up to date on my first family and your ancestors. Just before Uncle Sam sent me on that pleasure cruise, I was given a vacation. I spent it with the Brian Smith family and lived in their house, as they have adopted me for the rest of this war, me being an orphan. That leave was the happiest time I've had since I was dropped from the Dora. I took Woody to an amusement park, primitive but more fun than some sophisticated pleasures of Secundus. I took him on rides and treated him to games and things that were fun for him, and fun for me because he enjoyed them so. Wore him out, and he slept all the way home. He behaved himself, and now we are chums. I've decided to let him grow up. There may be hope for him yet. I had long talks with Gramp, got better acquainted with all the others, especially Mama and Pop. The latter was unexpected. I had met Pop for a few minutes at Camp Funston. Then he was to come home on leave the day I had to go back, and I didn't expect to see him. But he got away a few hours early, a bonus an officer can sometimes manage, and we overlapped. And he telephoned to the camp and got me a 2-day extension. Why? Tamara and Ira, listen carefully. To attend the wedding of Miss Nancy Irene Smith and Mr. Jonathan Sperling Weatherall. Athene, explain to the twins the historic significance of this union. List the famous and important people in that line, dear, not the total genealogies. And Ira and Tamara in our own little family, of course, and Ishtar, and at least 5 of our children. And I may have missed someone, not having all the genealogical lines in my head. I was best man to Jonathan, and Pop gave the bride away. And Brian was an usher, and Marie was ring bearer, and Carol was maid of honor. And George was in charge with keeping Woody from setting fire to the church while Mama took care of Dickie and Ethel. Athene can explain terms and ritual. I shan't try. But it not only gave me 2 more days of leave, much of which I spent running errands for Mama. These medieval weddings are complex operations. But it also gave me time with Pop. And now I know him better than I ever did as a son under his roof. And like him very much, and heartily approve of him. Ira, he reminds me of you. Brainy, no-nonsense, relaxed, tolerant, and warmly friendly. Bulletin. The bride was pregnant. A proper Howard wedding. At a time when all brides are assumed to be virgins. Pregnant with, if memory serves, Jonathan Brian Weatherall. Is that right, Justin? And who is descended from him? Remind me, Athene. I've met a lot of people over the centuries. I may even have married some descendant of Jonathan Brian at some time. I rather hope so. Nancy and Jonathan are a fine young couple. I turned my landaulette over to them for a 6-day honeymoon. Then Jonathan did join the army, but too late to get into combat. Nancy's warrior hero just the same. He tried. Some fiddling sergeant who couldn't find his ass with both hands wants me to round up my squad and do something about a dugout that someone was careless with. So, all my love from Corporal Buddy Boy, somewhere in France. Dear Mr. Johnson, please give this a second censoring. Some of it will have to be explained to the rest of my adopted family. I hope that Mrs. Smith received the thank you note I mailed from Hoboken and could read it. Writing on my knee while bouncing on the CNA roadbed does not improve my handwriting. In any case, I thank her again for the happiest holiday of my life. And thanks to all of you. Please tell Woody that I will no longer spot him a horse. From here on, we play even, or he can find another sucker. 4 out of 5 is too many. Now for the rest. Note signature and address. My rocker did not last to France. Then 3 chevrons dwindled to 2. Can you explain to Mrs. Smith and to Carol, those 2 in particular, that being busted does not disgrace a man forever? And that I am still Carol's own special soldier, if she will let me be. And in fact, I am far more of a real soldier. I am at last free of being tagged as instructor, and am now leading a squad in a combat outfit. I wish I could tell her where, but if I stuck my head up over the parapet, I might see some heinies, if one of them didn't see me first. I'm not gold-bricking 100 miles back. I hope you aren't ashamed of me. No, I'm sure you are not. You are too old a soldier to care about rank. I'm in it, and that's what counts with you. I know. May I say, sir, that you are, and have always been, as long as I've known you, an inspiration to me? I won't detail the 2 negative promotions, and the Army excuses don't count. But I want you to know that neither resulted from anything dishonorable. The first was in the transport, and involved a duty-struck master-at-arms in a poker game in an area for which I was responsible. The second came while I was instructing. Dummy trenches, dummy no-man's land, and the captain told me to dress up that skirmish line, and I said, "Hell, Captain, are you trying to save bullets for the Kaiser? Or haven't you heard of machine guns?" I suppose I shouldn't have said hell. In fact, I used another expression more common among soldiers. So later that day, I was a corporal, and my transfer took place when I requested it, again that same day. So here I am, and feeling fine. It is indeed a fact that the closer a man gets to the front, the better his morale is. I've become chummy with cooties, and the mud in France is deeper and stickier than in southern Missouri, and I dream about hot baths and Mrs. Smith's wonderful guest room for soldiers. But I'm in good health and good spirits, and I send my love to all of you. Respectfully yours, Corporal Ted Bronson. Hey down there, Corporal Bronson, send him out. Lazarus climbed slowly up out the dugout, letting his eyes adjust to darkness. Yes, Lieutenant? Why a cutting job? I want you to volunteer. Lazarus said nothing. Didn't you hear me?
I heard you, sir.
Well?
You asked for a volunteer, sir.
No, I said I wanted you to volunteer.
Lieutenant, I volunteered on April 6th last year. That used up my quota for the duration.
A latrine lawyer, eh?
Lazarus again said nothing.
Sometimes I think you want to live forever.
Lazarus still said nothing. You are so right, you 7-pound bliffy. And so do you. You haven't been over that parapet even once. God help this platoon when you do.
Once you pick 'em, tell 'em to get ready. Then you all ask to CP and I'll show you the map.
Yes, sir.
And Bronson, make damn sure you do a good job. Because a little bird told me that you're going to lead the way through the holes. Dismissed.
Lazarus went unhurriedly back down below. So we're going over the top. Big secret. Nobody knows it but Pershing and about 100,000 Yanks and twice that many Boches in the Imperial High Command.
Why do they advertise a surprise attack with 3 days of softening up bombardment that does nothing worth mentioning but tells the Boche we're to bring up his reserves and gives him time to position them? Forget it, Lazarus. You're not in charge. Put your mind on picking out three who can go out, do it, and come back. Not Russell. You'll need your automatic rifleman before dawn. Wyatt was out last night. Dinkowski might as well have a cowbell around his neck. Fielding is on the sick list, damn it. So it has to be a cowbell around his neck. Fielding is on the sick list, damn it. So it has to be Schultz, Tally, and Cadwallader. Two of them old unkillables and Tally the only REPL with too little experience. And a shame Fielding has La Grippe. Whatever it is, I need him. All right, Schultz gets Cadwallader. I'll nurse Tally through it. It was a two-squad dugout. His squad was sacked in on the left. The other squad had a card game going by candlelight on their side. Lazarus called his squad into a huddle, waking Cadwallader and Schultz to do so. Russell and Wyatt stayed in their bunks as the huddle took place against them. The lieutenant wants us to cut wire and told me to ask for 3 volunteers. Schultz nodded at once, as Lazarus knew he would. I'll go. In Lazarus' opinion, his assistant squad leader should have a section. Schultz was 40, a married volunteer, and trying hard to offset his name, his trace of German accent, second generation. But doing it steadily, methodically, without flash. No glory hound. Lazarus hoped that not many of the Germans they faced were of Schultz's quality. But he knew they were, especially veterans pulled back from the collapsed Russian front. His only fault in Lazarus' eyes was that he disliked Dinkowski. That's one. Don't all speak at once. What's the matter with them? Cadwallader said loudly, jerking a thumb at the other squad. Teacher's pets? They haven't done anything for a week. Corporal O'Brien answered for his squad. Tell your troubles to Jesus. The chaplain's gone over the hill. Whose deal? Who's next? Dinkowski gulped. Take me, Corporal. Tally shrugged. Okay. Damn you, Dinky. Why didn't you wait and simply make it unanimous? And damn that silly second John for ordering me to ask for volunteers. Better to tell him. Let's hear some more voices. This isn't the SOS. Lieutenant Birdbrain, you post-nasal drip. Cadwallader is right. It's not our turn. Why didn't you go through the platoon, Sergeant and Section Leader? They're fair about handing out dirty details. Russell and Wyatt spoke up together. Lazarus waited, then said, Cadwallader, you're the only holdout. Corporal, you asked for 3 volunteers. How come you want the whole squad? Because I want you, you unappetizing ape. You're the best soldier in the squad. Because I need you. Will you volunteer? I ain't no volunteer, Corporal. I was drafted. Very well. Damn all officers who interfere where they shouldn't. Wyatt, you were out last night. Get back in your bunk. Russell, you get some sleep, too. You may be busy soon. Schultz, I'll take Dinkowski. You take Tally. Black me up first and make it fast. I gotta see the lieutenant. Get out the cork. Lazarus got through their own wire without much trouble by enlarging breaks German shells had made. He did all the work himself, simply requiring Dinkowski to stay flat and follow him. There was the regular crump of artillery, their own, and the German howitzers. Lazarus ignored them, there being nothing better he could do. The chattering cough of machine guns he ignored too, as long as the sound came from far enough along his flanks. Snipers he did not worry about, other than to stay low. His prime wariness was directed at German patrols, if any, and at star shells, far too many. The latter were the reason he had Dinkowski stay belly down.
He did not trust his assistant to freeze and hold it if caught on his knees when a star shell burst. Once past the last of their own entanglements, he led Dinkowski, both belly-crawling, into a shell hole, then put his mouth to the private's ear.
Stay here till I get back.
But, Corporal, I don't want to stay behind.
Not so loud. You'll wake the baby. Whisper against my ear. If I'm not back in an hour, go back alone.
But I can't find my way back.
There's the dipper. There's the pole star. Go back southwest. If you miss the gaps, you've got wire cutters. Just remember this. When a star shell bursts, freeze. The time to move is just as it goes out, while their eyes are still dazzled. And try to be quiet. You remind me of two skeletons on a tin roof. Don't get shot by our own people at the last minute. What's the password? Oh, hell, it's Charlie Chaplin. Forget it again and you'll get more than a blighty. Some of our lads are trigger-happy. Never peek back.
Corporal, I'm going to cut wire with you.
Lazarus sighed inwardly. The clumsy little clown wanted the soldier.
If I don't let him tag along, it can kill a spirit. But if I do let him, it might kill both of us. Cadwallader, I admire your good sense and hate your guts, and wish I had you along. All right, not a word from here on. Pat my foot and point if you have to, and stay that close. Remember what I said about star shells. See any Bosch, don't breathe. If they surprise us, surrender at once.
Surrender?
If you want to be a grandfather, you can't kill a German patrol all by your lonesome. Even if you could, it would make so much racket that their machine guns would chop you in two. Stick close and stay down.
Lazarus could almost touch the first German wire when a star shell burst, and the private panicked. Tried for a shell hole they had just come through and was hit as he fell into it. Lazarus lay still and listened to screams as the dazzling star burned above him. One of our own, he mused. A German shell would burst to backlight the American trenches.
If that poor little dope doesn't shut up, the air around here is going to be thick with merry greetings. Can't cut wire with all that advertising. Oh, hell, he's my boy. I've got to take care of him. Probably be a favor to Dinky to finish him off, but Maureen wouldn't like that. Okay, let's get him back. I'll come back and finish this crummy detail. No sleep tonight, and over the top about 0400. Next time, join the Navy.
The flare died out, and Lazarus was up fast and moving as another star shell flared. Machine gun bullets stitched his side and knocked him into the shell hole. One struck a hard implant on the right side of his belly, tumbled, and chewed its way out just above his left hip. Others did other damage, nothing too difficult to repair in 4291 AD, but this being the Dark Ages, any one of them was enough. Lazarus felt it only as a mighty blow that knocked him off his feet and into the shell hole. He did not become unconscious at once. He had time to realize that he was mortally wounded. He lay as he had fallen and looked up at his stars, realizing that he had come to his ending place. Every animal finds its ending place. Some find it in a trap, another in a fight it cannot win. Some happy few in a quiet place to wait for the end. Whatever it is the ending place, and most of us know when we reach it.
This is mine. Did Dinky know? I think so. He stopped screaming. I think he looked for his. Ah, that it doesn't hurt. Thanks for making it worthwhile, Marine. Ida. Adorable. Tamra. Minerva. Laz, Lore, Ira, Maureen.
He heard wild geese honking high overhead, looked up at his stars again as they blacked out.
Coda. 2.
You still don't understand, the gray voice droned on. There is no time, there is no space. What was, is, and ever shall be. You are you, playing chess with yourself. And again, you have checkmated yourself. You are the referee. Morals are your agreement with yourself to abide by your own rules. To thine own self be true, or you spoil the game. Crazy. Then vary the rules and play a different game. You cannot exhaust her infinite variety.
If you would just let me look at your face,
Lazarus muttered pettishly.
Try a mirror.
Coda 3. From the Kansas City Post, November 7th, 1918. We report with sorrow those from Kansas and Missouri. Killed. Abel Thomas J., Private, Jefferson City. Avery Jones, M., 2nd Lieutenant, Sedalia. Baird George M., Private First Class, Topeka. Badger, F.M., Private, St. Joseph. Casper, Robert S., Sergeant, Hatfield. R.S., Corporal, Kansas City, Kansas. Kerr, Jack M., First Lieutenant, Joplin. Pfeiffer, Hans, Private First Class, Dodge City. Missing in Action. Austin, George W., Staff Sergeant, Hannibal, Missouri. Bell, T.R., Corporal, Wichita, Kansas. Barry, L.M., Private, Carthage, Missouri. Bronson, Theodore, Corporal, Kansas City, Missouri. Casper, M.M., First Lieutenant, Lawrence, Kansas. Dillingham, O.G., Private, Rolla. Fairley, F.X., Kansas City, Missouri. Hawes, William, Private First Class, Springfield. Oliver, R.C., Private First Class, St. Louis. Coda, 4, the last chapter.
Ira Galahad, got him?
Yes, hoist us in.
Oh, what a mess.
Ish about 2 liters and lots of jelly.
Get him inside and let me see him. Lore, can you get us out of here now? Seal up, Dora, and bounce it. Sealed and zooming. Screens down. What the goddamn hell have they done to Boss?
I'm trying to find out, Dora. Be ready with the tank. I may freeze him.
Ready now, Ish. Laz, Lore, I told you we should pick him up sooner. I told you. Pipe down, Dora. We told him he'd get his ass shot off, but he was having more fun than kittens, and wouldn't have thanked us, and wouldn't have come, and you know how stubborn he is.
Tamara, said Ishtar, cuddle his head and talk to him. Keep him alive. I don't want to freeze him, if at all, until I've made temporary repairs. Hamadryad clamped there. Galahad, one slug hit the finder, and that's how his intestines got so chopped up.
Clone trans?
Perhaps. The way he regenerates. Repair and support may be enough. Justin, you were right. The dates on his letters did prove that he didn't last through it. Losing the finder's signal pinpointed where and when. Galahad, are you finding more fragments?
I want to close him.
Tamara, rouse him. Make him talk.
I don't want to have to freeze him.
The rest of you shut up and get out. Go help Minerva with the children.
Glad to,
Justin said hoarsely.
I'm about to throw up.
Maureen,
Lazarus murmured.
I'm here, darling,
Tamara answered, cradling his head against her breasts.
Bad dream. Thought I was dead.
just a dream, beloved. You cannot die. This concludes the reading of Time Enough for Love by Robert Heinlein. This book was read by Lloyd James.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.